Nervous groom steps inside the ominous church, his only greeting the stares of those within. Save the date, send in your RSVP, and dust off your Sunday best. The wedding is an hour of gothic horror and comedy, exploring the story of an ill-fated wedding in the distant land of Latnovia. Combining elements of physical theatre and clown, the show explores conceptions of marriage, repression of female sensuality, and puritanism. Okay. Sounds like quite an interesting combination. It's on here tonight at 8 and tomorrow night at 8. Also, both shows at 116, $25, $22 concession, 1.5 hours. And didn't get a chance to play this yesterday, but I'm going to play it now because we ran out of time with Pat. We were having such a good time being Leonard Cohen nerds. Let's play Is This What You Wanted, which is the first track on our agreed best album by Leonard Cohen, New Skin for the Old Ceremony, and Is This What You Wanted, and it's got that immortal line, you were KY Jelly, I was Vaseline. Oh, someone's just arrived in the studio with a present for me. Thanks, Lyra. Let me just put this song on, and then I will open it. Back in a minute.
The promise at dawn. That was the morning after. You were Jesus Christ, my Lord. I was the moneylender. You were the sensitive woman. I was the very Reverend Freud. You were the manual orgasm. I was the dirty little boy. And is this what you wanted? To live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me. Is this what you wanted? To live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me. You are Marlon Brando. I was Steve McQueen. You were KY Jelly. I was Vaseline. You were the father of modern medicine. Yeah, I was Mr. Clean. You were the whore and the beast of Babylon. I was Rin Tin Tin. And is this what you wanted? To live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me. And is this what you wanted? To live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me. You got old and wrinkled. I stayed 17. You lusted after so many. I lay here with one. You defied your solitude. I came through alone. You said you could never love me. I undid your gown. And is this what you wanted? To live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me. And is this what you wanted? To live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me. I mean, is this what you wanted?
Okay, that was Is This What You Wanted by Leonard Cohen, first track on New Skin for the Old Ceremony, which Pat and I got all into yesterday and ran out of time. And apparently the gig was great last night. Laurel was there. Were you there, Matt?
No, we raced down after the end of like six and just missed it. But yeah. Laurel said she was crying. She said it was so good, so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazing story.
Yeah.
They are such a... amazing journey that they've had.
Mm. And we feel like stardom, well, we hope. I mean, not to, you know, there's definitely, I think it's good that Pat's in Wellington now, you know, perhaps in a more supportive and sort of...
In terms of music?
Yeah.
Creative space? Yeah. Yeah,
they said they wanted more to be in a band and sort of not be a, you know, not be a folk singer, songwriter necessarily, exclusively.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
So then you made it to, I did manage to read out a bit of your, you sent a message, about Barney Duncan,
honestly, I've never seen him before. I know he'd been on, cause we'd been watching Broken Wood Murder Mysteries lately and I'd seen him on there, but it's the kind of comedy that I love. There was no swearing.
Right.
All surreal.
Yeah.
And I was crying. He did this routine about Amazonian butterflies who've got sodium deficiencies who drink the tears of this particular type of turtle.
So he just
acted the whole thing out.
And they make them cry by harassing them.
And then he's doing things like saying, you know, Donatello and whatever. What are the Mutant Ninja Turtles? He's making the Donatello and whatever don't want to be in your gang anymore. And this turtle starts going... So the butterfly pulls out a straw and starts going... I mean, it was brilliant.
I love that sort of humour, right? That comedy where you're just going on a surreal journey with someone.
It was.
Into their mind.
Yep,
and
absolutely. And he's a performer and an actor, so he moves quite beautifully, and you just felt so safe with him, whereas some of the other stuff was quite eerie.
Right. So how many acts did you see?
About eight or nine. Right. It was all 7 or 8 minutes each.
Oh, so they had enough acts to...
They had 22 or 23 acts. Oh, because it's a 3.5-hour session. For $15, again, it's absurd.
Wow.
And, you know, kind of, I guess, 1 and 3 were good.
Yeah.
And
well, that's quite a good ratio, really.
Yeah. And 1 was, you know, 1 out of 3 was okay, and 1 and 3 tended to be excruciating.
And did Kipling and Hawani make an appearance while you were there?
Apparently, Kipling emceed the first, they had three kind of tranches of comics, and then they had a break between each one, and then so Kipling emceed the first one, but I talked to him about his set and he had a blast. They had 40 people and he said it was
cool.
Epic. He was buzzing. So.
Great. Oh, it was really enjoyable to catch up with him and Hawani in the studio.
Yeah.
I was just saying earlier, I'm quite enjoying these conversations with comedians. They're just good to chat to.
Yeah.
But I guess they'd have to have, you know, you'd at some level have to have the personality to... You'd have to be an extrovert, wouldn't you? Probably. You'd probably have to be good at engaging people quite quickly. And
reading a room.
reading
your audience.
Yeah. So that was cool. And so what else did you... So you
went to the Imaginarium.
Yeah.
I think we caught the second scene of the day, which was Brian Satterfield doing I'm Here to Help, I think it is.
Yeah.
And you sit down. There's chairs on the street outside on Rust Ave on the pavement. And... It's just hypnotic.
Wow.
I had no idea what his character was. He was walking around just in pants and no shirt and a scarf around his neck, reading out of a notebook. And I wasn't sure if he was like a counselor or a self-help guru.
Just in there by himself?
Just by himself. Oh. Yeah. And then he would just stop and he would sit on the couch and watch a video. Then he put something on the record player, and then he would get up again and read out of his book and put his glasses on and take them off. Then he opened this box of really old photos.
Yeah.
And he was quite lost in the photos. There was something quite poignant about the way he's looking at the photos. Mm. And you just sit there.
Right.
And
how long were you there?
We were probably there half an hour.
Yep.
Yep. God. Just and sitting on in a semicircle on seats outside.
Right, and so how long would his performance be?
I think Meg said when I talked to her, they're about 45 minutes each.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. So when it says 3:33 till midnight, that's sort of sporadic performances throughout the day.
Well, I think
was there always someone there? Or?
I think there's always someone there. There's a bit of a changeover, and then they kind of say till late. So I don't know how long they go for, and I don't know. It's kind of like that, does a tree make a sound when it falls over in the forest? And I don't know if they perform when nobody's there or if they're just staying in the whole time.
Well, it's nice to have some uncertainty, but there's always something to look at down there, I'm guessing. So
there is, and it's quite, honestly, I was amazed by it. It's quite beautiful. And the one that we saw certainly wasn't confronting, but... Someone I'd talked to Meg and Mike the previous day doing that domestic violence scene, and they were really quite disturbed by it, which is exactly what Meg was talking about. They wanted
people
to react to, you know, to be confronted and to wonder what's going on. And so I think it's just an extraordinary thing to do,
great.
To put on. So,
yeah.
So generous. Like, these guys are all, they're giving up their time to do it. None of them are actors.
No. And would you call it performance art? Is that probably the closest thing to what it is?
I guess it is, because there's no, from the one that we saw, there was no interaction. Brian didn't have any eye contact.
No.
He was, as far as he was concerned, he was on his own in his room at home, and nobody could observe him.
So. Yeah, so it's sort of an installation with a performance art going on.
It is.
Sounds great. I mean, that sounds like the kind of diversity that this Fringe has really got.
Absolutely. It is. You'd only see something like that at a Fringe festival.
Yeah. So let's have a chat about, I mean, you know, I full disclosure, I'm the director of Like Sex, so I'm not fishing for compliments here, but
it
would be nice to have an on-air review. We're waiting on Alice's review. No hurry, Alice, you just relax and do your best
Alice
work.
Had a busy day yesterday.
Yeah, she did. Reviews. She did, but the review for Chopin's last tour came in at like 11 o'clock, and so I chucked it up on the Theatre View website, and
it's a great review too.
Yeah, it is a good review, and I think it's great that Theatre View are having our reviews on, and also the Northern Advocate's publishing some. There's quite a delay. You know, it takes a while to get them up, but it's nice to have some coverage in the Advocate. I don't know how much other coverage the Fringe is getting, but
yeah, I don't know. Apart from all the socials, there's but the review for the one you saw,
To
Be Frank, was in the paper this morning.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh, okay, great. I haven't seen it yet.
Yep.
Tell us about Like Sex. What was your take on that?
Oh, look, I know you're the director, but I just thought it was extraordinary. It was such... I kind of knew what to expect from talking to you, and I know that, you know, Laurel and Stuart had seen it before, and we both said, you're going to love it. But it was... Those guys are incredible.
Yeah.
Your actors.
Yeah.
And... they all looked like they were perfectly cast for each of their roles.
Yeah.
And it was just, there were no flat spots. It just hummed the whole way.
Mm.
And it was poignant and it was funny. I didn't expect it to be as funny.
Yeah.
As it
is. No, and I think the laughter that was going on was really helpful for us, because at times it can feel quite dark and it can feel quite, you know, confronting. And there is that one scene which is disturbing. And I spoke to Hayley Douglas afterwards and she said, I was like, why are people laughing at that? And
I felt that too.
Sometimes our response is laughter to something that distressing.
Yeah.
But it sort of walks that line between being confronting and funny and true.
Yep.
So I think, you know, I was sitting next to Vincent Nathan and he said, afterwards I said to him, what did you think? And he went, very relatable.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's lots of different kinds of experience being portrayed in it.
There are, but I think that was the interesting thing is that the audience was a really diverse audience, and the front row, I think, were probably
girls'
friends,
high students.
Oh, were
yeah,
they? Or,
girls'
so
high
they
students.
Must have known some of the
I think they did, yeah.
So they were very vocal and very loud, but I mean, I was there with my mum and my father-in-law, you know, in their 70s, and they were creasing themselves as well. So it applied across the spectrum in terms of age range and gender, and, you know, it was...
Yeah, because I think we've all been there, haven't we? We've all been at that stage of life. So there's that sort of, you know, no one hasn't had blunders in their early relationships and mistakes and things. But you know, it transcends that as well and is about connection and you know, meaning and that last scene where the boy Gary is, you know, he's really the only decent guy in the play, really. I mean, they're both, the other two are just,
and you love him for it.
Well, yeah, you just, he's decent,
yeah,
and you need that, and yeah. And he, you know, he's not, you know, he's got that line, if I could, I would stop sex, at least my need for it.
Yeah,
you kind of think,
it's just sort of a whole lot of problems.
So I think it's a really, just a really well-written play, and I think the test of that is I still enjoy watching it, even though I've seen it 100 times. So,
well, I think though that, but that again, I was just staggered at how good the actors were.
Yeah,
they really, and they just threw themselves into it.
Yeah, they did. I think that a lot of them have done a lot of shows with Whangarei Theatre Company, and you know, there's big productions, Mamma Mia, and just West Side Story, and
you get a bit lost in.
That's all good experience for them. But, you know, one thing Cody, who plays Ben, the first male character who's on stage, said is, you know, you actually get to act in this, and you get to sort of really focus on something intimate happening between you and another person, whereas those big things are generally more about spectacle and you know, show tunes and all that sort of stuff. So that's been interesting. And I said to them, have you done many other shows like this? And they said no. So I think they've really enjoyed it for that reason, that it's been so well, especially because of the format of the show. There's only two characters per scene. Rehearsals have been just the three of us in the room a lot of the time, me directing and the two characters who are on stage. And you get to do some really detailed work, and you get, it's very kind of collaborative, because we can kind of experiment, see what works, what doesn't work. And and we're really grateful that we've had input from Laurel Devinney and Stuart Devinney to help develop lots of different aspects of it, and I felt last night they were just ready. You know, they were absolutely ready to.
Yeah, they looked like.
They were. You know, if we'd had to wait any longer, it might have sort of started to go off the boil a bit. But and that, you're right, that audience really lifted them, so it was cool.
But
and,
they had the chemistry between them was so authentic too. I mean, it was genuine. It was.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like anything was being forced or contrived or anything. It was really.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing. I love that there's. So, I mean, I don't know how much you've talked about. I mean, I'm not giving any plot away or anything, but basically, it's, you said before, it's two characters at a time, and then one drops out, and then another one comes in, and it's one of the characters from the previous scene.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that there was quite a deliberate choice. I'm not sure if it was directorial choice or not, but in the first scene, you'd have one who was, there was kind of a hierarchy, and they seemed a little, one of them seemed a little bit lower status, and then in the next scene, it was reversed, and they would have a higher status. And I don't know if that was deliberate or if that's how...
That's just how it's written,
right,
I think.
Okay.
You know, so the first scene, there's that character Ben who treats that girl Sam quite...
Appallingly.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, dismissively.
Yeah.
And then the next scene, he gets the same treatment from the character Mandy. And then, you know, and then in the next scene, you see her vulnerable, a bit more vulnerable. Yeah. She's still definitely that character.
She
is, but there's some truth about her and her behavior.
And
also, we were talking about it last night. I was saying, for a lot of, particularly women in the audience, seeing a guy treated like that by a woman,
not necessarily
enjoying the cruelty of it, but like often it's women being treated badly by men that you're seeing. And so for a lot of people, I think Nathan Joe has put some characters on the stage, you know, so there's a gay character who talks very honestly about her experience of coming out, and you know, it doesn't feel labored. It's just sort of woven into the fabric of the scene, where she's trying to have sex with a boy because, you know, she feels like she hasn't fully decided, you know, which way she's, what her sexuality is, and it's funny, it's absurd and bizarre, and yet that's what sex is at its you know, at its lowest level. It's like this bizarre act that humans, you know, enact. And I think the play does sort of show that quite well. It's sort of, and I don't know, I would be interested to know what you think about the drums, because I sort of felt like the drums, sort of when there's a sex scene, there's, you don't see anything, there's just some drumming, and the lights go out, and then the lights come up, and it's afterwards.
I kind of figured that the tempo of the drums, the way they were playing, kind of defined what the sex was like.
I'm glad you got that.
Sometimes it was kind of gentle, and other times it was discordant and messy. And I mean, I was trying to explain it to my mum, because I talked her into coming, because she felt a little bit confronted by what she'd read in the title, and was thinking, and teenagers and sex, you know. But look, she loved it. She absolutely loved it. And she said, I'm so glad you told me. But for her too, I think she was worried that, okay, am I going to be seeing kind of... scenes of a sexual nature on stage, and the way that was done, with it's all dark, it's quick, and there's this, you know, quite tribal at times.
Yeah.
To the side of the stage. The other thing I loved too was that the whole cast sits is around.
Oh, you like that?
I did. I thought that it kind of made you feel. I don't know that there was. I don't know. In some ways, that they're supporting, but also there's this
voyeuristic,
voyeuristic part to it that.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure how that was going to work, and I don't like lots of exits and entries. I feel like that's messy and sometimes distracting. Plus, that venue really
you didn't have a choice. There's nowhere to go.
I mean, you can enter and exit out the back, but it would have just and also the way we've set it up with the you've got one piece of set for or one or two bits of set for each scene, and those have got to be brought on and off, and you know.
You need people to do the lifting. Needed,
you know, we didn't really have much of a crew. I realized, you know, we should have actually had some, you know, stage manager and all that sort of stuff. But we just didn't really have room for anyone like that. So they just did all of that stuff. And yeah, I agree. It kind of their kind of presence was sort of supportive, but also watching the action in the way that a lot of lives are lived in public or on social media now. Sort of that kind of idea, but. I really like the simplicity of it, and Nathan Joe, the writer, emphasizes in the stage directions at the beginning, minimal, everything minimal.
Yeah.
And did you feel like the set kind of was enough? Like, did
Totally. Yeah. It's you know, what is it, a park bench, a couch, and a bed.
Yeah.
And they just kind of move between them. And,
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It did not need any more set.
Great. Well, we're hoping we can sell some more tickets for our shows at 116. So if you like the sound of it, I think what Matt's saying about it being funny is important, because it could be confronting, and it is confronting at times, but it's redeemed by its humour. And I think Stuart pointed out that scene where the character picks up this girl at the party and he's drunk, and they go off and have sex, and you actually hear that, you hear what's going on, you don't see it,
that's the
dark climax of the play. And from then on in, it sort of lightens up, and then there's this quite touching non-sexual scene to close it where friendship is emphasized over sex. And the character Sam, whose sort of default is, do you want to do something, which is... which is her way of having, and that lovely little monologue she has at the end
that's the one that got me, actually. It was so beautiful and so poignant when she talks about that moment where I guess she gives herself to somebody because it's the only time she feels any sort of love or any sort of friendship or connection with somebody else. And I totally relate to that. It was beautiful the way she did it.
Yeah.
And really touching.
Yeah, she's such a great actor. Breeze, she's really like you said, they all just felt perfectly cast. And the funny thing is, we didn't do auditions.
Yeah,
they just all turned up and perfectly, and we didn't even have arguments about who was going to have which part,
right?
You know, and Shayla, who plays the Lisa, the gay character, and I said to Shayla, are you okay to play that character? She's like, I would love to play that character. Awesome. And she was great, wasn't she?
She was brilliant.
She's so strong and so I don't know what it is, but she just embodies that character so well. She's such a, they're all great. And, it's been such a joy working with them. I've literally enjoyed every minute. I've always enjoyed the rehearsals, you know, it's always just been I've always thought such a buzz, you know, and I said to them, you know, what we're doing is, you know, why do we do this? Why do we do theater? And it's the creativity, you know, for us, and giving a gift to the audience.
Yeah.
You know, we're not just there to, and we're there to kind of give them something. And that, I definitely felt that flow last night with those, especially with those people sitting at the front who definitely were engaging, you know, on the level of this really spoke to them, you know, to their experience.
Yeah. But it was reciprocal too, because we walked out and, you know, they'd created a little channel where they were standing, the cast were standing, and they were just, they were elevated.
Yeah.
They were floating. They were so energized.
Yeah.
It was really... It was a real pleasure to actually see them and be able to say thanks.
I didn't know they were going to do that.
Right.
But they had to exit through those doors at the side of the stage.
So that's where they ended up.
Yeah, and I'm going to say to them, we should do that here at 116 definitely, as well, because it's a nice thing to do, isn't it?
It's a
nice
it's a
sort
really
of
nice thing to do.
Nice way for them to get some acknowledgement and some feedback immediately.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's probably enough.
Well done, anyhow.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to set up for our next guests who are coming at 11. Via Zoom, and hopefully it will be a little bit better than yesterday. So I'm going to play a cicada track. So Pat played this live yesterday, and it's a great song. And gets he said, "I'm there's a bit of screaming in it. Are we going to be able to do that in the studio?" And I was like, go for it. And so here we go, Pistols at Dawn.
What has become of the plans that were made? And what was the point of the rain? Who's collecting the spoils from the wars we've won, or so you say? Who's gonna pay for the flowers on my grave? 'Cause I'm not quite sure. And I don't think you're gonna tell me. So come on, Pistols at Dawn. Oh yeah, let's settle this gently. Oh, we haven't talked, I think, in a number of years, except for once, very brief, on the street, at the same traffic light with a few awkward stares and almost half of an effort to speak. You said you were pursuing a performance degree, and it was going great from what I could tell. Yeah, the act you put on to say you're doing just fine deserved an Oscar by itself, and I wasn't quite sure. But I think you wanted to hate me then. So come on, Pistols at Dawn. Baby, let's settle this like gentlemen. Oh, and I've never needed advice on how best to fuck something up. Oh, and I've never been quick on the draw. Feel free, shoot me down, 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 down. It's been years since the war, almost 2 decades on Earth, so I should be done with this by now. It took me years to get over what you left me with, and a month you under someone else. And I'm not trying to win nothing back with no song, and I'm not trying to score no points neither. It's just the victory parade and the poppies are gone, and I'm still not sure who was the winner. Oh, and I'd like to know how you're sleeping at night after all of those crimes you committed. And I'd like to know how one handles this right once all the sanitized history's been written. 'Cause I'm not quite sure, and I don't think you'll tell me. So come on, Pistols at Dawn. Come on, let's settle things gently. 'Cause I'm not quite sure, and I don't think I'll ever be. So come on, Pistols at Dawn. Yeah, let's settle this properly. I'm not quite sure, and I don't think I want to be. And see, the Pistols at Dawn, or fucking coffee and cake at the library.
5 minutes, all right.
Well, you'll make to begin. Apart from that ignored elephant, this room's got next to nothing in. Even the dust's moving out, but you're moving in. Yeah, we're moving in. And you'll buy new toys, blister packaged, $2 joys, better than the ones you broke before. And when they die, you can buy more. Get ready for the world, man, it's all on the shelves, it's all in stores. And they'll prescribe new drugs, new features, the same old bugs, better than the ones prescribed before. Kill off the remnants of war, kill off your monotone and scroll and every other feeling too. And you'll dream new dreams, America, baseball ice cream. You'll lick it off the silver screen, decide that's all you want to be. Know that you've seen all there is to see without ever looking hard. And so you'll be just like that empty room, that rusted bike, built for a purpose, time forgot, around some load-bearing terminal rock. You were filled with potential. It's a shame you were not full of any substance.
Okay, welcome back to Fringe Radio. Matt's still here, luckily, because we're going to have a quick bit of a chat about preview, a bit of a preview of today and maybe the next couple of days. And then it'll be time to talk to Sarah from... Well, now the screen's gone blank. Put Up or Shut Up, I think that's what we're talking about. So... Let's have a quick chat about what's coming up today. So we've got, it's Thursday the 6th, we've got the Imaginarium and Scary Stories, Scary Pictures, which I've already talked about at Whangarei Library at 6 o'clock. Two Boys, One Stage has been cancelled. I'm not sure why, but never mind. So there's nothing at Fringe After Dark until 8, when Kipling and Hawani are doing their second intense Tiger Fist. Chopin's Last Tour is on tonight at 6:30 again. And the Blue Valley, which is a music event.
Yeah, I talked to Karina Sam and Sam, Karina, that's right. Yeah, yep. And that, I reckon, will be really quite beautiful. It sounded, anyhow.
Ooh. Yep.
It's very unprofessional.
Okay, yep. Ethereal rhythmic guitar sounds and authentic, honest, warm vocals, and that's at the Octagon tonight at 6:30 p.m. And then at 8 p.m. is The Wedding, so I'm going to catch The Wedding tonight.
That's supposed to be quite edgy, isn't it? Quite...
Gothic horror comedy, yeah. Type thing. Yeah, which sounds interesting. And that's a full-length theatre piece here at 116. Okay, let's put one more track on by Cicada, since we're having a bit of a Cicada moment, and then we'll get sorted for our Zoom interview. This is Sisyphus and Iodine.
If you'd always known that none of this was real, that there's nothing that's outside your head you could touch or taste or steal. And he asked you as honest as he could, yeah, well, did you dream up me? Could someone as lovely as yourself, such an ugliness dream? And you grabbed him by your teeth and took him dancing, and you showed him just what details you'd imagined, and you left while he was sleeping. You were walking home in the late dawn as the sun got in your eyes. You rubbed to try and get it out and just smudged your disguise. As you crawled back to the flat you share with seven other men, each one of them with the same face, just one name paying rent. And you pulled all of the curtains closed to keep him out the house, and you wash him out your eyes and clothes as you start to come down. And there are no sounds and no one's here to hear them, as you curl up, fall and fade out of existence, and your dream carries on without you as you're sleeping. And you'll be out again some other night to take some more advantage. You'll never get the details right. Sometimes that's just how it's happened. And you're never sure what wrong could mean or what median you're walking. But you read somewhere that it'd be alright if Sisyphus enjoyed it. So you roll that stone up just to watch it tumble, and you crawl back down, so careful not to stumble, as you leave, as yet another frightened boy's left sleeping. And you'll never take them back to see the place you hid your heart, your place or thine. You've said so much, yeah, the other option's hard. And you'll see a thousand new rooms before the boulder wears to sand, and you find there's no remainders save for the scratches on your hand. And you're wondering whether all of this was worth it, and you won't quite know what next you'll be deserving, as your dream leaves you behind while you are sleeping. Well, isn't this lovely? Your hair in my hands, no pillow left to lean on, and no strength left to stand. As you tell me this love has only served to make you weaker, and you're too weak in love now to try to move on from this leaning reliance on some black and white reel. But babe, this ain't classical silence. How'd you think it could feel? Oh, to hear you day in and day out say you need me to carry on breathing, say it's always been love, so how could it be wrong for you to need to feel tortured, for me to have to be there in everything that you've authored, lest any pages should tear? So I'm the blood in your signature, your heroine for the fix, or I'm the closest you'll get to her. till we're both torn to bits. Yeah, I'm your perfect sonnet, the girl from those books and songs. From the ancient to modern, the broken man lies and leans on. Yeah, you used to be so charming, and I guess you'd still be. Were there still the beginning, not dead history? Now you're under that rubble, and all I am's bored of nostalgia. But we can't go back now. No, those people are gone, and all that's left's those old love songs. We still want to believe about weakness and obsession, pillars, scissors, and dreams. But you wake up from dreams, or you die, and that record's getting worn out. You say I've made you weak, babe. Oh, you must have assumed I was strong. And I won't hold you up any longer. I can't hold you up anymore.
Was Cicada and Delilah leaving. What great guitar playing, beautiful. And when we were ranting and raving about Leonard Cohen, Pat was talking about how great the bass playing on the album we were talking about, New Skin for the Old Ceremony, and is. And I think the more you listen to something, the more you find all the beautiful bits. Unfortunately, there were a couple of shows that I left out of my little preview because they were over the page. Thursday the 6th of October, which is today. So we've got Ryan McGee arriving in Whangarei later on, and he's doing a show called The Scottish Kiwi, which is a stand-up show about, I'll read out in the programme, it says, after fleeing Scotland, Ryan McGee plonked his fabulous gay ass in New Zealand. Ryan will be sharing his observations on what it means to be Scottish, Kiwi and gay. The holy trifecta, if you will. And Ryan won the Best Newcomer in the Lower North Island New Zealand Comedy Guild Awards in 2021. So it should be a pretty amazing show. We've just got some great comedy at this festival, and comedians are fairly mobile. So I guess Fringe it's low overheads for the Fringe, which is good. And Ryan is coming into the studio tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to have a chat, because he's got another show on Friday at 6 p.m. and so tonight's show is at the Octagon, and then tomorrow night's show is at Fringe After Dark. And then also tonight one more performance of Snowcock, which is also at the Octagon Theatre. So both of those shows, Ben's shows are... Oh, no, sorry, tonight's Fringe After Dark, my bad. So last night was the Octagon, and tonight is Fringe After Dark. And if you haven't heard about Snowcock, it's Ben Tito's 15 minutes of fame came by a seemingly innocent weather warning. He's working for Manawatu District Council and posted something on their Facebook page about some severe weather that was coming, which was a penis-shaped post somehow. I can't remember exactly how, but I think the danger area was a penis sort of phallic-shaped, and the rest is history, and he's now a social media celebrity in Manawatu, and they got a lot more followers after that post. So the story covers that and some things about lockdown, and sounded great. So that's today's shows, and then tomorrow we've got lots more shows. So it's ramping up for Saturday, which is the big, huge day with lots going on. So Ryan's also got a show on 6 p.m. the Scottish Kiwi. And the Imaginarium continues. There's an opening at the Hangar Gallery called Slogan Off. I'll find out a bit more about that. And then there's the Tiny Show. There's two shows of the Tiny Show at 2 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. The Tiny Show, let me tell you a little bit about that. Welcome to a magic collection of worlds and wonder. Help a quiet clown choose and shape the story to be told and watch it unfold before your eyes through song, instruments, costume and puppetry. Grab a pillow and lean in close for a tiny, intimate theatre show for the whole family to enjoy. This is an improvised experiment and a development conceptual work by Company of Giants exploring chorus, improvisation and storytelling. And I think the performer is Thomasin Fisher-Johnson. I think it's just a one-person show, and they've got performances at the Octagon, which will be a great venue for that show, I'm sure. Friday the 7th at 2 p.m. and Friday the 7th at 5:30. Okay, let's have one more song, and then hopefully we will be talking to Sarah and Poppy about their show Put Up and Shut Up, which is coming up this weekend. Just get it right. I'll tell you about it after the song. I'm going to play something else from New Skin for the Old Ceremony, which is Field Commander Cohen, and this one's for Anne in England.
Field Commander Cohen, he was our most important spy. Wounded in the line of duty, parachuting acid into diplomatic cocktail parties, urging Fidel Castro to abandon fields and castle, leave it all and like a man come back to nothing special, such as waiting rooms, ticket lines, silver bullet suicides, and messianic ocean tides, and racial roller coaster rides, and other forms of boredom advertised as poetry. I know you need your sleep now. I know your life's been hard, but many men are falling where you promised to stand guard. I never asked, but I heard you cast your lot along with the poor. But then I overheard your prayer, you be this and nothing more than just some grateful, faithful favorite singing millionaire, patron saint of envy, and the grocer of despair.
Yeah, hello,
working.
No, that's Rachel.
Oh, the Yankee dollar.
Oh, yes, sorry about that. The camera on my laptop doesn't work, so I have to use my husband's.
I I know you need your sleep now.
Yeah.
I know your life's been hard, but many men are far.
Oh, yes, yes, and thank you for doing this.
Will you promise to stand guard? Our lover, come and lie with me.
Then I can't see you.
Who you are.
Sorry. No, we can't see you. Black screen. There you are.
Be your sweeter self a while until I ask for more, my child. Then let the other.
Wing it real good.
Okay, welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien, and I'm very pleased to welcome Poppy. Sorry, I knew I'd do that. Rachel and Sarah, who are going to talk to us about the show Put Up and Shut Up, which is on this weekend, Sunday the 9th of October, 3 p.m. here at 116. Have you guys been to Whangarei before to perform?
Yeah. We've both been. Rachel lives in Auckland, but I'm in the South Hokianga up the Weka. So
West
is our local place.
I've got technical problems. Sorry, I just need to work out how to let you guys be heard. Oh, Matt, where are you when I need you? Okay, I don't know why that's happening. Can you hear me? Can
yeah,
you guys
totally.
Hear me talking?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, well, I, for some reason, can't hear you, and I need to work out why that is. God, it was working when we did the test before, so I don't know why.
Oh, baby. Poor bugger, yeah.
Can you... Okay. Yeah. Okay. I wonder if Matt's still here. I'm just going to just, can you just stand by and I'm just going to put a song on
yeah,
and just
sure.
see if I can get Matt back in here to show me what's going on.
Sure.
Still a bit Mickey Mouse, eh?
Yes, I do look like Mickey Mouse. Thank you very much. Yep, can hear you.
Yes. Can you?
Yeah, like, where are they? Well, I've sent you a track from the show called Dizzy. Yeah, it was. An MP3, yeah. I mean, if you're not able to play it now and you're able to get to it later, you could, I don't know. Oh, nice. Thank you. Yeah. So this is taken from the real life musical drama Put Up and Shut Up. And this is when our protagonist, this is when Rose is a young 16-year-old and meets the love of her life at a spring fair dance. And she's... This show is set 1963. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, we're just... Rachel, this is new to you as well. We're actually in a shearing shed. It's the end of the shearing season. And... And so Rose is there, the shearing gang are there. And yeah, she's kind of burgeoning in her life and spring. Exactly. So, yeah, and then adds that wondrous layer of Catholicism, and you know, I mean, it's writing itself, Damien. It's writing itself. Yeah. It's exactly what happened. It is, and unfortunately, what happens for her? She's sent away to have the child. Her parents weren't, you know, ashamed and disgraced. And as had so many young women, she was sent away. Now, unfortunately for her, she has her baby and is told that the baby had died. When in point of fact, the baby is taken and adopted out. So Rose then goes on in. Yes, I mean, the more common story is that they would sometimes be allowed to nurse the babies for 6 weeks and then the babies are taken. Some women were made to give birth in stirrups, blanket across, not even allowed to see, and the baby was taken the moment they were born and put in another part of the home and then adopted out from there. Well, where the story came from was on my last album, I wrote a song called Limbo, and about a woman, about the woman that we meet in Dizzy, you know, this young girl, and who just falls desperate in love, and then loses her baby. And I thought, my God, what happens to her? But then as I dug deeper into the story, I realized I was digging into my own family history, and my mother got pregnant before I was born and was forced to give her baby up for adoption. And I actually met her later on in life. So it is sort of loosely based on my own family history. And then as other people have come to the project, of course, it's a part of their history as well. And we've been taking this out, doing a living room tour of it. So it's myself, Rachel, Poppy, and now Jules as well. And we're piano, four voices singing this story. And then after the shows, people are coming up to us and saying, oh my gosh, that happened to me or my mom or my aunt, or grandma. And yeah. No. The last case here, well, look, there's a few layers to that story in this country, but 1975. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from 1955 to 1975, over 100,000 women in this country alone, so, I mean, per capita, that's a crazy statistic, had their babies taken. Yeah, it does.
Drain the sap from me slowly.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's not a jazz hands kind of musical. It's not, I mean, we've struggled for a long time even calling it a musical, because it's not what you might expect from, you know, a West End show. You know, it is it's this really deep story told in song, completely with song. No. Yeah.
Is and the irony is, because I've really railed against the idea of musicals, that's not to say that I loathe all of them, but I realise, bloody hell, I'm writing a musical and I don't even like musicals. And then I realise, though, too, because the story, there is comedy in it and there are some real quirky elements in answer to your question, there are up-tempo songs. And I guess... because it is so tragic, you need comedy to sort of lighten that up a bit. And I think that...
But I can't... No, I can't
it felt like it served the story better to have it all sung.
I see. So... sorry, I've just had a bit of technical assistance there. So I think we're... operating properly now, finally. So, sorry, Sarah, I wasn't able to concentrate on what you were saying there again. Can you just repeat that briefly, what you're saying?
Just in the writing of this musical that I was surprised I was writing, yeah. I realised I didn't want any dialogue in there, that the story is so... It's very real. It's a lot of tragedy, but there's a lot of comedy as well.
Yeah.
Kind of, I think, realism, like yeah. Mike Leigh style.
Uh-huh.
If Mike Leigh were going to write a musical, this is probably the one he'd write.
Right.
And I think that, and so for me, music can just go places that dialogue alone can't. Mm. And I've always been troubled by that bridge between
dialogue and song.
Yeah.
You all know when it's going to happen. The dialogue stops. There's a slight pause, and you go, "Oh no!"
Yeah.
It's almost a classical piece, you know, from beginning to end. It has movements.
Right.
And so when we, so it just makes sense for me to sing the whole thing.
Right.
And emote everything through music and either lyrics and or instrumentals.
Right. Wow. So Rachel, what's your sort of role in the show? What's your...
General cook and bottle washer. I've been a believer in the show ever since, you know, Sarah shared that she was writing it.
Right.
So I suppose I've been kind of, it's been on the radar for about 8 years. Is that right, Sarah? 7, 8 years? Something like that. And I just wanted to know more myself. I was really intrigued about it, and I could feel that there was something more than just the few songs and the basic stuff that we had back then.
Right.
And so I've just kind of been there really to push Sarah along, to support her bringing it out. I guess I've been a little bit, I've tried to help Sarah bring it out.
Right.
And luckily, also, as a musician myself, I'm lucky enough to be able to be doing the backing vocals along with Poppy, who's Sarah's incredible daughter. And Poppy and Sarah, when they sing, they're so intertwined with it. There's such a level of synchronicity between the two of them that it's kind of been quite hard to come into that. But... because, you know, I've developed my own ways and foibles and stuff.
Mm.
But it's fantastic because Sarah's writing is so incredible. Her timing and her phrasing, her way with words and all of it is so incredible. Very different to my stuff, I guess.
Mm.
So I'm really enjoying how it stretches me
to
come in and make the show what it needs to be, I guess. It's what I'm trying to serve it.
Great. So when your performance at the Fringe this weekend, so from the description in the program, performing songs from the forthcoming musical. So are the songs all written? Will it be like a gig more where you're performing the songs?
Well, it's sort of like going to be, we're going to have our feet in both camps. I think there is a theatricality, the fourth member that's come to the team, and although Rachel's not a backing vocalist, There's lots of harmonies going on, but actually, between the four of us, we're singing 12 characters.
Yeah. Oh.
And so there's quite a lot going on. And our new team member on board is Julie Edwards, who's also got her own show.
Oh, Barry and Ninja.
Barry and Ninja.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've met Julie. She's been in for an interview. She's great.
Yeah, she's so great.
Yeah.
And so she's bringing her sort of directorial techniques and skills to us. And so what you'll see tomorrow is there is some theatricality to it, and there is going to be some embodiment by Poppy, Rachel and Jules. I'm sort of held hostage a little bit because I'm playing the piano.
Right. Wow.
And so it's us physically bringing it to life orally, and there will be some physicality as well.
So just piano in terms of instruments?
Yes, just piano and voice.
Right. Wow.
So these three extra singers with me are not just any old thing. They've had to really master and be amazing at pretty intricate harmony.
Yeah. I definitely got that from Dizzy. It's sort of a very complex song. It sounds, you know, there's a lot going on in terms of the music and the harmonies. What about the title? Can you tell us a bit about the title?
So, Put Up and Shut Up. It's a really funny song. It's about second one in.
Yeah.
And it's just Rose talking about the drudgery of domesticity. She hates it.
Are you playing Rose, or is Poppy playing Rose?
Great question. I am playing Rose.
Yeah.
I am playing Rose. And I'm playing Rose.
Yeah.
Uh, and Poppy. Oh yeah, can't tell you too much.
Okay, okay, sure, sure.
There's a real cliffhanger bit in it.
Okay.
So I play Rose, and I'm just pissed off with my life.
Yeah.
I'm Catholic. I can't leave it. Mm. I've got two kids, a husband. It's just dull. And one line in it, which I grew up with, were two lines: put up and shut up.
Right.
You've made your bed, lie in it.
Was that your mum or your dad or both?
Yeah, both. But I think it was a phrase that, is it the 70s?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Like, it was just like, you know, shut up and shut up. Put up with it and get on with it.
Yeah.
You have no sovereignty over your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is your life. Just get on with it.
Mm. Wow.
No autonomy.
No. Yeah. No. Right. So how many songs will you be performing? Are you performing all of the songs from the musical?
Yeah.
Right.
It's that's another great question. I'm going to say
30. I'm yet to write, possibly, isn't there, Sarah?
Yes. They're all one or two more that are still being written.
Right.
But the story doesn't lack because of it. There's a character that you're like, but how he became a priest? What happened?
So we'll get a sense on Sunday night of Sunday afternoon, sorry, of the narrative. Like we'll get to sort of follow the narrative through the songs.
Absolutely. Yep. You will. You're told a story. You're sung a story from beginning to end.
Right.
And then. By the time we get to the end of the show, because we've done a few now in people's living rooms around Northland and a few in Auckland, we've all of us just gone through this incredible process, I suppose, and we're all in this space, this very tender space together.
Yeah.
And at the end of the show, there's an opportunity for the audience as well and for us all to sing the last song together.
Wow.
The last refrain.
Yeah.
To just really gently honour and close the space that we've opened.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
Then people can come and... there's an opportunity for people to ask us questions if they're moved by what they hear, which invariably they are.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's been a show, has there, Sarah, not one single one, where people haven't come up and shared, like, there was one show we did, and a woman said, that's my story. And there's a line from one of the songs, and she said, I literally said that when she went to find her mother. And you just find all these incredible stories, you know, that are out there.
Mm.
There's so many people affected.
Mm. Even now, there's still all this history, isn't there, of people in people's lives and
about babies. Yeah.
There is I think one phrase that comes into this is the intergenerational, the transgenerational wound that we're all still carrying, individually as a nation and as family members, whānau. It's just the ripple effect of this is enormous. And some people are talking to us about stories they haven't said out loud before.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still so much of it not spoken of and not... So I get a sense from talking to you that we follow Rose's life. You know, you talked about her having a husband and two kids. So what is it, sort of the whole trajectory of her life, or how much of that is...
So we actually meet Rose... in her early 30s, she has a husband and two children,
right.
And we gather fairly rapidly that she's not happy and she's spinning out.
Mm.
And
is it the grief? Is it the grief of the losing the child that's causing
it's
that?
The grief. It's the grief and the rage.
Yeah.
And her grasp of the real world is she's losing a grip.
Ah.
And she goes in and out of her fantasy worlds. And then until one day there's a knock at the door and she's faced with a ghost from her past.
So by then, she's 30. So it's like 15 years later-ish from since when she had the baby?
Exactly.
So it's what, 1978-ish kind of time, yeah, like late 70s?
Exactly right, yeah. 1979. And she, so then that's when we go back in time with Rose and we discover what actually happened to her.
Ah, okay, great. Wow, it sounds fascinating. And that song, I might play it again because it's, I sort of, it's one of those songs that, you know, I instantly liked, you know, it's got that kind of real, I guess, warmth to it or something. Like, I love the orchestration. Where did you record them? Like, where have you done all that sort of stuff?
So I've recorded some, because a lot of them are really brand new songs, so I'm yet to actualize those in the studio.
Right.
But that was recorded at LME Studios in Blockhouse Bay in Auckland.
Right.
And Louis Bernstein was the producer of my last album. And so there was that one. And then actually what I could send you is Limbo. Limbo is the song about her as a girl and losing her baby, and
right.
That's the one that really got me into writing the whole thing.
Ah, so that was the first one you wrote, was it? Ah, okay. So you're normally, what, you're recording albums. You're just you're a musician as well, like a performer as well, a songwriter.
I have been, Rachel and I performed for years. We've been in bands. We write our own stuff as well,
right?
And we've recorded and I guess this, yeah, so I took a kind of a bit of a hiatus because this story just kept bugging me, like, and I just had to write it. So for the first time I'm kind of stepping into more of a theater space with this.
Okay, right.
And so it's very different for me as a performer performing songs. And it's not like you do a song and wait for, well, you hope,
Rapturous
at the end.
Yeah.
It's a seamless performance from beginning to end.
Mm.
So the both of us are in new territory.
Right. And when you were in bands and stuff, what sort of music did you do? Like, are you what kind of musician?
Well, in my big band that I had, I used to say it was a cross between the B-52s and Glenn Miller. I just
right.
It's so a whole mishmash,
like pop, melodic, sort of like pop. Would you
melodic,
describe
cinematic, orchestral,
right?
Quirky, Nick Cave.
Uh huh.
I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's interesting. So, where would we find that on Spotify? Or
you can find me on Spotify.
What,
yeah.
What do we search up?
You look for McCombie and the Absolute Truth.
McCombie, that's the name of the band?
McCombie and the Absolute Truth was the name of the band, yeah?
Yeah.
So M-A-C, yeah. And then you look up the album No Man's Land. So that was the last release, which feels like a million years ago now. I think it was 2014 or 15.
Yeah. And is that on Spotify?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'll be keen to listen. All right, we better wrap this up because I've got someone else coming in a bit and I need to get ready. And we do, as you know, we have some technical challenges, but I think we're getting there. It's been great to chat to you both.
Thank you.
No,
thank
it's a pleasure.
You.
And I'm really looking, it's so great. I really feel like when I talk to people, like, it kind of gives me so much more of an insight into what they're doing and makes me want to come and see it. So I hope I'll be able to come on Sunday the 9th. It's an hour and 15 minutes. It's a musical performance, four of you on stage with a piano, and it's telling the story of Rose, who mourning the baby she had at 16. Sounds fascinating. And the poster, it's just so evocative of, you know, that sort of time. I think there's a Smiths song, isn't there, about a girl losing a baby.
Yes, a
beautiful song. And you know, it's got that 60s, you know, she's got a fag in her hand, it's got like the 60s wallpaper behind her, and so many, it's just hard to imagine what lives were like then. We live in a different time now, and it's a lovely poster, and the some of them are up around 116. Have you guys been up to 116 before?
No, I haven't.
Never been
Jules
here.
Jules has obviously been around and come in, so I'm really looking forward to it, yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to welcoming you here, and really looking forward to the show. Thanks for joining us. And Sarah, if you send me that other song, I'd love to play it. But in the meantime, I'll play Dizzy one more time. And
all right, Dylan, thank you so much.
Been great talking to you both.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You too. Bye. We could carry on, couldn't we? But we could end it and then go back in.
Take a leaf, yeah. Take a
breath. Why do we do that?
Well, can we go back from me slowly?
Should we try? Because it's up to him to leave, to end it, isn't it?
No, because I set the cup. I've reinitiated
from the cup. Just remember that every drop you drink makes me weaker. And you say I'm amazing, that the possibility of me drives you crazy. And I say don't go crazy, just dance with me among the spoils of spring.
To Fringe Radio. I'm Damien. We've got the last half hour of the show, and we've got some guests coming in a moment, Charlie Underhill and the crew from The Wedding. So thanks to Sarah and Rachel for talking to us about Put Up and Shut Up. Sounds like a fascinating show, and I'm just searching up something on Spotify, a track from Sarah's band. But haven't found it yet, so I'll just put up the playlist again and get organised for the next guests, and long for a studio engineer to help with all this sort of stuff that I'm not very good at. So here we go with a bit of music from the playlist while I get organised for the next guests.
please be gone. You stayed here much too long. Don't you wish that you could cry? Don't you wish I would die? See me seesaw kids, child women on the skids. The dust will choke you blind, the lust will choke your mind. The pig and hose have set me free. I tasted hate, sweet hanging trees. I tasted hate, sweet hanging trees.
Damien, with you till 12. Had quite an interesting morning, had some great guests on and some technical issues which Matt's been trying to help me iron out. But anyway, we're at the last section of the show. I'm going to be talking to three performers from The Wedding. So The Wedding is on here at 116 tonight at 8 p.m. and tomorrow night also at 8 p.m. It's a 1.5 hour show. Tickets are $22 or $25. And I'm very lucky to have Kyle, Aaron and Melissa here from the cast.
Yes.
How big is the cast altogether?
Six of us?
Five of us.
I guess we've had a lot of times where we've had our producer kind of step in to green light and we've had people away. So sometimes it feels like six.
It does.
There's definitely five of us.
Right. And that's quite a big cast for Fringe.
Yeah. Bit of a labour of love.
I mean, Fringe seems to be a labour of love anywhere. No one's getting rich.
Yeah, this is true.
So you guys are all based in Auckland.
Yes.
And you all met through a
course at Unitec through a...
Yeah, so we all did our degrees at Unitec. There's one person in the cast who was 2 years below us at Unitec, but other than that, the other four of us were in the same year at the Bachelor of Performing and Screen Arts.
Right.
So we did 3 years of drama school together.
And what's that like as a degree? Like, what's the... Tell us a bit about that, your experience of that.
Oh, certainly an experience, yeah. For sure, yeah. It's very intensive, full-time, Monday to Friday. It's not, I would say, the traditional university experience
yeah.
of sort
no.
of picking your classes. It's...
Yeah.
Pretty curated, so
yeah.
Your tutors take you through the courses they've designed it.
And
yeah.
how many people in a year? Like how many of you are
there
in a year?
Usually, I actually work there now as a teacher part time.
Wow.
So I just kind of never left, to be honest.
Yeah.
so you usually take between kind of 22 to 26 students a year,
right.
And like Kyle said, it's a pretty unique training course because it's utterly practical.
Yep.
It's really designed to teach the craft of acting,
right.
not a sample of techniques, but
yep.
to give you enough time to really like bring into your body the technical skills
yep.
needed to work in theatre and in screen, which is cool.
Yeah.
So you also get to know your classmates really, really, really well.
Yeah,
which
because
yeah.
I did a year of traditional university in Canterbury, and just like I met like maybe like 5-10 people or something, and
oh.
you know you'd be seeing
yeah.
a lecture hall of 200 people, and it's sort of hard to meet anyone. But
yeah.
you really do get to know your
yeah.
classmates very well. Probably. Slightly more than you
yeah.
necessarily
yeah.
want to know, but yeah.
But I guess that's the nature of it. And so, yeah. so did this show? Have you done? Is this your first show as a company? Or?
No, it's not.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, what else have you done?
We have. I think this is the third full length work we've made now.
Wow.
So we kind of I stayed on after I finished drama school to do my master's in creative practice,
mm-hmm.
focusing on. Looking at the techniques for devising physical theatre and circus theatre, and Aaron and Grace, who is our director, who was a cast member for a bit, and George in our company, really, really generously donated their time to working on the practical research with me. So
right.
we started as working as a team in that master's research phase, and
right.
actually made our first show as a kind of body of research
uh-huh.
And presented that, which was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
We kind of found our methods of how we work together
mm-hmm.
throughout that process, and then we were lucky that we got to then redo that show the next year.
Uh-huh. What sort of show was it? What was that? Because this is a gothic horror.
Yes.
Movie.
Yeah.
Is that your genre? Or do you
Well, I would describe our shows as loosely being like soap operas, probably. but they incorporate elements of like circus, physical theatre, kind of clown, commedia dell'arte, slapstick kind of stuff.
Right.
With a kind of, I guess they have an underlying thing of like socially kind of critical stuff, but
oh.
it's mainly just like a sort of wet comedy.
What does that mean? I'm not familiar with that.
I guess I would contrast that to like dry comedy,
yeah.
if you know
okay.
what I mean.
Call it low-hanging fruit. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
right.
yeah.
your description, so when you say about social kind of...
Yeah,
of
ideas.
Issue, ideas.
Yeah.
Conceptions of marriage, repression of female sensuality and puritanism. So do you think that's still an issue that, you know, are those things that we still struggle with in us, in our...
I think definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's undeniable that particularly like sexually, I
yeah.
would say there's a lot of things in society that are quite repressive, and
mm.
particularly around like females and like, I mean, obviously Mel can probably speak to this more than I can, but you know, it still feels
yeah.
like there's a sort of hangover from those Victorian values of like,
yeah.
oh, we don't talk about these things, you know,
yeah.
these are kind of taboo subjects in
yeah.
the world, you know.
For sure.
Yeah, I think especially most of our cast, I guess we're all kind of between the ages of 27 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So I think we're all at an interesting phase of our lives where I think probably the previous generations, this is the phase where you do start getting asked that question like, well, are you getting married? When are you having children?
Yeah.
And I think we're hitting this exciting phase definitely in our kind of generational age gap where there seems to be a lot more options now that are starting to become more acceptable. And I think the show deals with a lot of that.
Right.
It questions kind of monogamy, traditional gender roles and
yeah.
relationships. It looks at, kind of very subtly, we look at aspects of sexuality that are now being
mm.
able to be talked about more as well.
Wow. And I think we try and do it in a really light-hearted way.
Yeah, that's kind of the point.
We try to slip a bit of a question in through a smile.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it, because otherwise you can end up banging people over the head with it.
Yeah, totally.
And humor's a great vehicle, isn't it, for getting an idea across. It's funny because I was just talking to Sarah McCombie, who's doing a show called Put Up and Shut Up, which is a musical about a forced adoption in the 60s. And, you know, it's like, that feels quite recent, you know, that quite barbaric things were being done. And we live in a more permissive time. Mm. Does it feel that's a freedom for you guys? Does it feel like, you know, you just talked about having more options, you know, does that... You know, so you're still getting asked the questions. There's still the sort of traditional, you know, getting married, having kids type thing. What's your
definitely?
Kind of...
I think there's a tension between those two things of like, you know, do you live, particularly now, I guess, with the options that people have available, you know, through social media or whatever, in terms of like the different pathways you can kind of live in. There's a kind of tension between like traditional ways of living your life, like you get married, you buy a house, you have kids, and I mean, some of those things aren't, you know, necessarily readily available to people. So I guess now you start to question about, you know, like, how do we live and is this the way we want to live? You know, even things like quiet quitting, you know, I think there's a lot of things that have happened. Quiet quitting.
Getting an education here.
Well, essentially it's just doing your job, but I guess there's like traditionally been an expectation that if you're doing a 9-to-5 job, you do extra hours outside of your paid hours. And, you know, it's sort of a movement, I guess, rejecting that idea is that like, okay, you pay me for 9-to-5, I'll do 9-to-5 and I won't do any more. And I guess it's that kind of idea of, I don't know, I guess rejecting being a cog in a system. You know, I think people now want to be recognised for, you know, as individuals rather than small little wheels and big mechanised systems.
So it's not actually quitting your job. It's just saying, this is what I'm going to do, and you know,
I'll do what I'm paid for and not much more.
Right.
It's the idea of like I've had some interesting conversations with my grandma in particular about, you know, our generation are kind of seen as sometimes a bit fickle because we jump sideways from job to job to job, whereas it used to be, you know, you enter a profession and that's your life trajectory. And we're not really doing that anymore, and I think it all kind of comes together to put us in this interesting space now where we've got so much freedom to choose. And I think part of the show questions, well, what are the consequences of some of the choices that are available? What are the consequences of not changing our attitude towards some of these things?
So how does it get written? Does the show actually get written as a, or do you devise it, or how does it?
Yeah, so we, I think the process we've kind of fallen onto is that we have a process where, for instance, in this show, Mal, George and I got together in a room and we came up with an idea, basically, which was like we wanted to do a show about a wedding. And then we did a whole lot of sort of research around weddings, things like that. I think at some point someone came up with the idea that it would be a gothic horror. So we read a whole lot of like
I've always
gothic
wanted a bridezilla. I've always loved the idea of like this idea of like it's normal for the bride to just lose their stuff and become a bridezilla. And I was like, how fun would that be if it was like an actual horror character?
Which maybe there is. Who's to say? And so after that, we kind of got all the ideas together and then we just sort of started crafting story beats. And then once we had that, we got into the devising room with all of our lovely actors. And then we just went through a process of basically taking a kind of story beat and then fleshing it out to create a scene.
Lots of improv. We work using character archetypes too, which I think really helps our process. It means we're not starting from scratch. We're working from quite physical character archetypes. For example, like might be like, let's try, you know, the villain today. And I think that saves our actors time, and it means that in terms of the story, we can loosely find some archetypes from the beginning and then get people to play with them from there.
Because it's a nice starting point for sure. Something to work from.
Devising can feel very loose and unfocused. So then you sort of pull a script out of that?
Essentially we would kind of workshop scenes until we had them in a place where we liked them, and then we'd record them and then basically type out what was said. We'd have a full script and then kind of edit the script a little bit to, you know, solve any issues that had come up, and then, come into the rehearsal room. And
how long would that process take from sort of...
It's a really good question. It's hard to say accurately because we originally were aiming, we started seeding the idea of this at the very, very beginning of 2020. We went into our kind of development research phase probably in like, I think March that year. And then started devising with our acting team not long after that, and we're originally meant to have a season of this being shown at the Basement in Auckland in October, and then COVID hit, and then we were meant to be at the Basement in April, and then COVID hit again. And so
yeah, it's probably been about 2 years almost.
So the Basement is the sort of place to sort of do, you know, your development season or whatever you'd call it, with like try it out in front of an audience, basically.
Much like well, we're getting a really special opportunity with the Fringe here because it's a wonderful location where people are coming excited to see new and emerging work. They're not coming to see, you know, a well-known popular naturalistic theatre, which
my thoughts
are which is not what the show is at all.
So it sounds quite a fun show. Would you say it's like your intention is to give us a good time,
definitely
make us laugh. And it's quite physical. And is there music? Is there any singing or songs or anything like that?
There is some original scoring.
I don't think anyone in the cast is a singer. But
actually, I think I heard Emily in rehearsal the other day, who might be a hidden talent that we haven't utilised.
You caught them singing.
But in terms of the music for the show, we actually, it was all essentially created by Nell's partner.
His name's Sam. He's a musician and has never made music for a theatre show before.
He's done a great job.
He's had a real...
What kind of music? Like recorded music? To create atmosphere?
Kind of like a composition, a scoring, like you would have in a film. He has loved having me sitting behind him going, it's loosely like this and this is what we're trying to get. And then he goes... But what does it sound like? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's your job.
I was waiting for you to produce that.
So do you all play multiple characters in the show?
I do.
Some of us do.
How many characters are there all up?
Oh, what a question.
Lots.
Quick maths, Aaron. Go.
Maybe, what have we got? Five people, so it's probably like eight, maybe? Eight or nine characters?
Oh, yeah. So some of you only play one?
Yeah. So Mel and I both play one. Mel plays my mother. I don't think that's giving too much away.
And so you're not also the bride?
Oh, no.
Oh, I see. Loaded
question.
I will say that one running theme throughout our works is all of the works are set in the country of Latnovia.
Ah.
Being a very, very real, don't Google it, a country kind of based off... I guess an Eastern European kind of location.
Vaguely Eastern European.
That might just have some familiarities with New Zealand culture.
I see, right. So interesting hybrid there.
Yeah,
it's a place of parody, I would
say. So all the shows have been set there.
Yeah.
Okay, and have they all had the Gothic horror kind of tropes or...?
No, so the first one was set in a circus, basically. The Latnovian, the National Theatre of Latnovia, I believe it was called.
What was the show called?
So the show was called Get That Circus Out of My Lion. So it was essentially a circus show that goes wrong, kind of.
I see.
Yeah, it follows a troupe of Latnovians come to perform in New Zealand.
It kind of criticises this thing we've noticed in New Zealand where... our audiences seem to be really willing to pay $100 for a ticket to see an international touring arts production, but nobody is that happy to invest $30 to go and see a equal quality New Zealand-based work. And so the show kind of follows the parody of like this international touring production that arrives and is just falling apart, which was quite enjoyable.
I see. That is interesting, isn't it? What's that about? Like, do we just not think we've got what it takes, or do we have this what used to be called the cultural cringe, didn't it? Like we're not as good as everyone else.
Yeah, I think that's a sort of common theme across New Zealand among creatives, not even just in sort of acting or theatre, or it sort of comes across. I mean, tall poppy syndrome, right? That's quite a common phrase, and I think it's pretty apt, to be honest. It's easier to sort of pull down people you know, and sort of look at the big wide world as people who can create something amazing, yeah. whereas we really are just as capable of doing that.
But here. I think it exists yeah. in New Zealand as well, you know, there's definitely like a hierarchy in the arts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like if you can get royal on your title, you know, you yeah. won't struggle for funding. Yeah. You know, if you're yeah. the Royal Ballet, you'll get $12 million yeah. in. You know, yeah. it's like, we've never received funding for anything we've ever done.
Really?
No? Yeah. We did.
That's not true, actually, yeah.
Wow. I won I guess it was like a scholarship. We won the Unitech's Bold Innovators Scholarship after oh. I completed my master's, which gave us some money. Well, I guess it was for me, yeah. but I used it with the company to develop our second work. But
right.
definitely haven't accessed any
Creative New Zealand
funding. No, nothing that. Like oh, that. Okay.
Have tried to access that?
Oh, yeah.
We're getting better at our application yeah. skills.
It's a process.
I'd say we're learning.
But by the third full-length production, you'd think that was a fairly substantial body of work that would indicate some, you know, some talent and some commitment. And I don't know, what is it? What's that about? Why is it so hard to get that funding?
I guess, yeah, this is a question that I don't think I know the answer to, mm-hmm. to be really honest. Mm-hmm. I think it's highly sought after.
Right. And there's potentially less of it than there was previously, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of, like, I guess, with the inflation and things like that, yeah. it's probably the same amount of money but essentially worth less now.
Right.
I think it also is difficult because I understand when you're issuing funding you want to give it to groups that have a track record yeah. of managing that process well and using that funding to kind of as a launching platform to then make commercially successful work. Mm. But when you have an arts industry that isn't necessarily able to function mm, on a yeah. commercial level
yeah.
just because of the way that it is, mm. I think it becomes very difficult to, yeah, as an emerging theatre group, to
yeah.
break into
yeah,
that market
yeah.
of, because yes,
it sort
we
of stagnates
made.
Around people who've already had funding,
yes.
so you can do a good work, so then you can get more funding, because
yeah.
it's like, well, I've done this, and it's like, I
yeah.
guess a never-ending cycle. And like you talk about the commercial aspect, there's like, you know, mid to high level practitioners who can't necessarily move away from just getting funding and just simply
mm.
funding themselves
mm.
through commercial activity, you
mm.
know. So it's like these kind of big trees and the little trees mm. can't go through.
So that was the second show. We were talking about your sort of history of shows. So that was the Get That Circus Out of My Line, and then what was the second one called?
The first show was it had some moments of the essence of Get That Circus Out of My Line,
oh.
but it was an interesting one because it was actually, it was a show and it went for about an hour, but it
yeah.
was technically the body of research for my master's
oh, sorry,
degree.
Right,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah so we went through a practical research
yeah.
process.
Mm.
So it was interesting. It was quite different making a show like that where
mm.
it wasn't necessarily about making a really good, dramatically functioning show.
Right.
It was about testing all these techniques. So same title, but
I see. Right.
Then we redid the show with a full narrative. And a lot of development.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And to be fair, actually, we did do... So when we first created Get That Circus Out of My Line, we also did a children's
oh, yes.
version of the show, which was an entirely different show that we created in about a week.
Called Charles Steals the Show.
Yeah.
Charles Steals the Show.
And it was about a naughty magician in the circus who goes a bit evil.
Yeah.
And kind of ends up in this counter rivalry with his grandma, who is a circus performer, of
right.
course, in the show.
Least deep themes, I would
yeah.
say.
Slightly less.
Sounds like you all really enjoy this kind of collaborative work. So it sounds like you've got a good team.
Yeah, I'd describe sort of this show. We've just had a lot of fun making it, I think.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
really just us sort of getting on stage and doing what we think is quite funny and quite good and hoping for the best. Yeah,
awesome.
It's good.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up because the show finishes at 12 and there's a podcast which stops recording at 12. So I've run over a few times and something just gets cut off in your conversation.
No problem.
So you're on tonight here at 116 at 8 p.m. and tomorrow night also at 8 p.m. and if you go to our website, whangareifringe.co.nz, and click on the tile for the wedding, it'll take you to the event finder page. I'm seeing it tonight with the cast of the play that I'm